Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody, good afternoon and welcome to another weekly edition of the End Time News Report with the one and only Sister Marie. Well, we are in studio today. It's October 20th. It's kind of chilly, at least in my neck of the woods. It's a dark, dreary day. No rain yet, but it's dark. And it feels like snow is in the air, although we have no snow yet. But where I'm at, that can change instantly. So we have a great show in store for you. If you're into hot chocolate, then go get your hot chocolate. If you're into tea, maybe you like a little lemon ginger tea, go get that. If you're into coffee, go get you some of that because you're in for 2 hours of sound biblical discernment and exposition. Well, without any further ado, let me bring on my dear sister. Now, let's see if this works. Sister Marie, how are you doing today?
I'm doing all right, and you?
Like I said, it's chilly today. It's cold, dreary. I've been out
Same
and about
here.
doing a bunch of stuff. I had three layers on of shirts, winter shirts.
Mm-hmm.
Then I had a sweater on top of that. Then I had a coat. And then, of course, I had a baseball cap. And I was still cold. I was still chilly. So it's that time of the year. It's a beautiful time of the year. I mean, as I drive through my area, all the trees are like the leaves are reddish, orange, brown. It's just gorgeous. It's just beautiful. And you know, cold. So there we are, and we have a great show in store for the people today. We've been doing this this analysis of Prince Charles and the new King of England, and now he's got a new problem in his hands because the Prime Minister, who was in office 6 weeks, has resigned. And so who knows what's going to happen there. And the economy all around the world is just tanked. Every economy has tanked.
Really? You know, the pound is only worth a dollar teen right now, American.
Right. Well, that's good.
Think
because
about that.
That's good because the dollar is really worth 78 cents.
Yes.
So, you know, the real value, you know, they tell you that the dollar is 100 pennies, but the dollar will only buy you 78 cents worth of buying power.
Mm-hmm.
So you're down 22 cents on the dollar.
Yeah.
Add to that 13 more cents. So the Brits are doing a little better than we are, but I understand, you know, we're all suffering.
Yeah,
we're all,
plus $2.
You know,
If you were to get 500 pounds a few years ago, it would have cost you $1,000. Think about that.
Yeah. No, I used to go into Heathrow Airport, and I would go to that little booth where you change your money, and I would give them $200, and I would get 100 pounds. I says, I just got gypped.
Yes.
You know, but that's the way, you know, that's the way it was.
Yep.
I mean, you know, you give
That's
them 200,
right.
you get 100 back of theirs.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and it's just the way it is. But now,
it's terrible.
Now it's almost caught up.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, really. Yeah, Euro, I heard the Euro was worth more than the dollar. And at one point, the Euro, you know, we got more euro for our dollar. It wasn't worth as much as the dollar. But now, you know, the euro has surpassed us too. So, you know,
a lot
of people feel that this prime minister, it's just a Trojan horse, you know. I was listening to Hugo this morning. He spoke on it for about 8 minutes. But he seems to think this was all planned. I mean, Boris can come back, and, you know, the numbers, looking at the numbers, he said, you know, Boris was the 77th prime minister,
right?
Which is interesting. She resigns after 44 days. You know, you start looking at these things. The queen reigned 70 years.
Mm-hmm.
When you look at this stuff, it really does makes sense that there's a plan going on here.
Yeah, sure.
You know?
Sure.
You see it all through the Bible, you know, these things. And then when you start calculating what they're doing, I mean, it's crazy how it makes sense, all of it.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. You know, how it fits together.
Mm-hmm. Sure, Sure. So.
So she doesn't look depressed.
What was that?
I said she doesn't look depressed. Departing.
No. Well, I mean, in one hand, you know, she can say to her family, "I was told to do this. I was told when to get in and when to get out." So. I have, you know, none of these politicians really have any power. They're being put there.
That's right. That's right.
So, it
and we'll find that out today.
Sure.
You know?
Let's see who they nominate and who they put in there and what's what and, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So,
we'll see how it goes.
Right. Well, on a local note, I want to make an announcement. And for those of you who heard me speak several months ago, I started pastoring a little church. I was voted in by 14 people. That was the election, if you can believe it. The election was 14 people voted me in as pastor. It was all 14 did. There were no one voted against. And the chairperson got up and said, "In the history of our church, 148, whatever, this is the first unanimous vote." But, you know, hey, they only have 14 people, so, you know, it's no. So I was voted in as pastor, and now there were only 14 people attending the church, but there was a gazillion people on the church rolls.
Right.
So as I started to preach and teach and visit and do this, some of those people started to come back. They had left because they didn't want the former pastor to be pastor, so they left as a protest.
Mm-hmm.
So between
right.
that and adding some new people and that, the church is growing. And I had spoken to you back at the end of July, and I said, I'm going to have to not be able to do these broadcasts anymore.
Right.
And so we said, all right, it's a 3-month period. So we have August, September, October. And then after that, because the work is really overwhelming.
Absolutely.
The work is just, I'm really a one-person leadership team, even though I'm doing a lot of training and I'm getting a lot of.
Okay, his phone has been doing this on and off. And I know what the problem is, so we'll wait for him to come back. It's a $10 phone he uses, the main line. So he needs to spend another $10 and get another phone. But until then, we'll just wait for him to come back because it will reconnect eventually here. So we'll just wait and see what happens. It's been going in and out on him for days, if not weeks now. So it happened today. I actually spoke to him earlier, and this happened when we were on the phone call earlier. And he did come back, and I promised him that I would just hang in there when it happened again. So that's what we're going to do. So I'll give a little bit of the introduction on our show today.
Can you hear me?
Can you hear me? Well, I was just, yes,
okay.
I can. I just explained what was going on with your $10 phone.
Absolutely, so. Absolutely. They don't make landline phones anymore because no one uses landlines. So Walmart has one for $10. That's the only phone I could find, a landline phone, and you need one to kind of do these shows. So there you have it. So it's time for a new $10 landline phone. But anyway.
Yes, that's what I told him.
Going back to what I was saying, this coming Thursday, the 27th, will be my last day on the End Time News Report, and then it's up to Sister Marie to keep the ball rolling, and we'll just pray and wait on her decision. But until then, we're going to have a great show today. And
yes,
we're going to have a great time.
And I just want to say, I was honored to be discipled and to sit under your ministry all these years. It's been fantastic. And I've learned a lot. You know, you never know it all. You know, you never quit learning. If you do, there's a problem. But
right.
I've learned so much sitting under you in this ministry. It's been incredible. And you and the missus have been great friends to our family all these years, and that will continue. So
amen.
I'm thankful for that, you know, and it's been a good run. My decision, we'll see. We'll see.
Mm-hmm.
We'll talk about that by next week.
And listen, learning, I mean, you know, when you do a show, or let's say you're into apologetics,
mm-hmm.
when you listen to people who are involved in apologetics, certain people go after certain people.
Mm-hmm.
They don't necessarily go after everybody. They just, God assigns them a wolf that they go after, or a group of wolves that they go after, but they don't go after every wolf. And so
right. This
is why the Lord gives us a lot of apologists, so that with all of these different apologists, all the wolves can be covered.
Right.
So when I started to do the show with you, it was your show. You named it. And you picked all the audio, and the Holy Spirit would give you the topics. And
mm-hmm.
And so I also learned a lot, because there was a lot of people that I wasn't focused on. I'll give you an example.
Right.
I had never heard of Jensen Franklin, never,
mm-hmm.
until you said to me, hey, did you hear this guy? He's got the spirit of Python out there. And I said, spirit of Python? Who's that? What's that? And you said, I want to send you a copy of his book. So you got me a copy on Amazon. You had it shipped to the house. And so that's one of many examples of over 6 years of shows. Again, no one person can cover all the wolves. And this is why the End Time News Report
right.
was so good and vital, because we all learned. We all learned about different people.
Well, thank you.
We learned about the drag queens. I didn't know anything about those nasty drag queens shaking their bottoms in front of little kids.
That was a little article that the Lord sent my way. Just a little article that, you know, I felt this is going to explode. We need to talk about this, you know, because
right.
this is going to just, you know, overwhelm us. And that little article, I just felt that, and we talked about it, and sure enough, I mean, unbelievable. We knew it would take off, but that's ridiculous what we see now.
Right. Well, look at all the other stuff that has been covered in over 6 years, because, I mean, it shows that you did 6 years of shows, but then you were on before the 6 year started to take,
mm-hmm.
we started to count the 6 years, so close to seven, or maybe even seven. So there's a lot
mm-hmm.
of topics that have been covered. When you take 52, let's say you take 300 by
mm-hmm.
two, That's 600 hours of news.
Mm-hmm.
And then in many of your shows, there were times when you did 15 different news stories.
Correct.
Right? I
yep.
mean, this is so
yeah.
it's been an eye opener for me. It's been a blessing
well,
to
you.
Me.
And thank
you. So I just came here and I just pushed buttons. Okay, audio one,
oh,
I pushed
no.
the button.
It's more than that.
And
you gave me the strength and the courage to get through a lot of different things. We had a lot of obstacles, especially in the beginning, that continued on, but we just kept going, you know, as,
right.
you know, the Lord just kept us moving forward. So, you know, polemics and political correctness, we have a cocktail brewing out there right now. Really.
Right.
You know.
Sure. Sure.
You know,
sure.
things the Lord would have us do stand out like a sore thumb right now. Mm-hmm.
Right, like Virgil, honestly. Like Virgil and the other guy. What's his name? Virgil and what's that other guy's name?
Oh,
Virgil
Darryl.
And Darryl, right? I mean,
yeah.
I never heard of those guys. I didn't know what they were involved in until you brought it to the broadcast. So that's just one of many. I mean, there's so many. Go back, you know, and listen to the 300 broadcast, and my goodness, you know, what was not covered on the End Time News Report? Everything that hit, everything that came on the scene was covered. And not just in America, but stuff around the world. I mean, that guy, that priest who was going to confirm his calling in his religion, who had to run from one end of the lake to the other that was crocodile infested, and he started to run, and by the time he got to the second crocodile, he was a meal.
Exactly.
I mean, what didn't we cover on the End Time News Report, right?
Yeah.
What so
Alice
Bailey, right? How many shows did you do on Alice Bailey? And
quite a few. That's where we started, and
right,
we're still talking about her.
And the Lucis Trust, right? And all that,
right?
All that stuff,
yep.
And the Masons, and the Freemasons, and So it's been wonderful. So not only did you said you learned, I learned, and I think everyone who listened to the program learned, and. And that's the way, you know, it's supposed to be. So we thank you.
We learn from each other.
For your years of service, and it is my prayer that you will continue. All right, let's do today's show.
Well, we'll see what the Lord says. Okay.
Yes.
I shifted, a few things to do this show. On Sunday, last Sunday, True Stream Media posted an audio that caught my eye. This was only last Sunday,
right.
And it's called King of the World, the High Symbolism of Charles III's Coronation. Now, a couple things drew me to this audio. One was the word symbolism. The
right.
second was King of the World. So needless to say, this is my third time listening to this audio, believe it or not. This couple, they're amazing researchers. And we've used them a few times before. So if there's one thing we know for sure right now, Charles is a part of this agenda. Now, the people in England, they feel he's one of the kings in the book of Revelation. Some also believe the Antichrist will come out of the monarchy. Now,
okay.
I believe this monarchy will be a major league player in the agenda. But there are things I would agree with the British. Especially after researching some stuff. And you
right.
may also, at the end of the audio. So I believe, you know, also the Bible is so true when it says there's nothing new under the sun. If you understand history, you can plainly see that. You know, Satan just keeps changing the wrapping paper. That's all.
Mm-hmm.
The ultimate goal of Satan is to take as many of God's ultimate creation, men and women, and have them, you know, thrown in the lake of fire with him. That's what he
right.
wants. And he ensnares people by power, wealth, fame. Greed is always their downfall.
Mm-hmm.
So when Charles chose to remain Charles and go Charles III, I was thinking about Charles I. He lost his head, literally, for the same things that Charles hopes to accomplish in England today. So the audio deals, you know, with all this. And
right.
keep in mind, the monarchs of England, they are not to be political, supposedly. Okay?
Right.
They're to have no political, you know, involvement. So for me, their symbolism tells us the agenda. We know that. Everything has a meaning behind it with these people. You know, it's hidden in plain sight. So this plan's been moving forward for a long, long time. And we're going
right.
to see that through the audio. Now, I just want to mention here, the 10 kings in Revelation 17:12, are 10, and I'm taking this off the Berean Bible, the 10 kings in Revelation 17:12 are 10 kings who have not received a kingdom, but will receive 1 hour of authority as kings along with the beast. Now, 1 hour can denote a short period of time. That's one thing I want to make clear. It's not, you know, it might not be literal 1 hour.
Right.
Yeah. It can mean, it can also mean a short period of time. So when we go to verse 13, these kings have one purpose, to yield their power and authority to the beast. So we'll see that also in Daniel 7:24. So in Hebrew, and this is according to Behar, quoted by Dr. Curry, in Hebrew, 10, a whole, was to be divided into parts. 10 was the number commonly adopted. So some scholars believe that 10 may not be literally 10, but at this point, I see where it could be. So what do you say to that, Bro?
Well, like with every obscure Bible prophecy, for example, is it really literally 10 or is it literally part of a whole? And what I always say to that is, we'll know when it is fulfilled. Well, yeah, right?
Yes.
When, right now, we're just guessing because, you know, it's symbolic language. So we'll know more when it actually happens. Is it literally 10 kings, or is it a group of kings that make up the whole, that represent the 10?
Yep.
So
that's right. That's right.
That's the thing, we would agree.
That's the
safe way to interpret it, because if you go the other way, as some evangelicals have, you wind up like Hal Lindsey, who was a best-selling author and an evangelical end-time teacher, but whose book, The Great Late Planet Earth, you can throw that in the garbage.
Correct.
Right?
Correct.
So that's why you need to be – because when you're looking from where you're standing to the future, you think you see – but then when the future comes and you look back, you say, boy, I was wrong.
Yeah.
So
you have
that's
to look
why...
at it, if it's symbolic, like you said.
Right.
You know, and some things will manifest. We may see them manifest before our own eyes, the prophecy, before we truly understand it. You know, is it literal? You know, or is it symbolic? We don't know. But, you know, I've always looked at the... I could say right now, looking at it, I could believe that there could be the 10 kings. You know, if I look at, like, Davos, we could say that, but it could have a different meaning. And the 1 hour, you know, thing, that's a short, that, you know, can denote a short period of time, too. That's another meaning.
I would say that 1 hour is not 60 minutes. And looking at text, I would be leaning more towards an hour being a short period of time.
Period of time. Yes, exactly.
Right?
Me too.
So,
yep.
Yeah, that's how I would lean on that one. But again, I would know more, I would know with much more certainty when that hour comes.
Correct.
See?
Correct.
I would know.
Yep.
I would know for sure when we actually live the moment. Yeah.
Then we'll all know.
Correct. Absolutely.
So.
Absolutely.
Okay. So this is King of the World, the high symbolism of Charles III's coronation. This all fits into today. I can tell you that. So you can stop it as you like, but don't go past 11 minutes without, you know, stopping it. Don't go past the 11-minute mark. So, you know, this audio will take us through history and show that this monarchy that they have in England has always been a player in the end times, from Charles I, Charles today, and they'll tell you why. Okay.
Right. Now, question. Was Charles the First named Charles, or he was named something else and he took the name Charles?
You know, that's a good question, because I've always known him as Charles the First.
Okay.
You know, that's a good, great question.
Yeah, because
for a history
buff,
that's a good.
Yeah. No. I asked the question because I know that Pope Francis adopted the name Pope Francis the First.
Right.
And John Paul II took the name John Paul II, but that was not his real name. So I wanted to know if the same thing happens with the English monarchs.
Well, you know, Charles could have chose any name he wanted, Charles, George, whatever. He has quite a long name, Charles does.
Okay.
You know, Mountbatten wasn't a good, you know, last name during World War II.
Mm-hmm.
So they went with Windsor, you know.
Right.
They
right.
had the Hanovers, you know, in history. But, yeah, that's a great question. I'm going to look that up, because I've always known him as Charles the First whenever I've read up on him. Interesting character he was.
Okay.
And one of the things he wanted to do, Charles the First, the monarchy, and be known, take it where he had complete control of the monarchy with no, you know, one else in control. And he wanted to be like God, in a sense.
Right.
He wanted to be the mediator between God and the people. And he
was
beheaded for it. So, you know.
Interesting.
Amazing. Yeah, it is. He's interesting. He's an interesting character, I'll tell you. So, if you want to play that, we'll start. Just don't go past 11, but you.
Okay.
You know, you can, if you don't want to stop it until then, you're fine. If you do, go ahead. It's up to you.
Here it is.
Okay.
In a pamphlet called Common Sense, published in the lead-up to the American Revolution, Thomas Paine wrote, "Men who look upon themselves born to reign and others to obey soon grow insolent. Selected from the rest of mankind, their minds are early poisoned by importance, and the world they act in differs so materially from the world at large that they have but little opportunity of knowing its true interests. And when they succeed to the government, they are frequently the most ignorant and unfit of any throughout the dominions." Isn't it funny how history seems to repeat itself over and over and over? We're constantly being told we're progressing as a people, and yet we keep finding ourselves locked in the repetition of certain cycles, as if we are doomed to repeat moments in time where imbalances were not properly worked out. Anyone who has studied history in depth knows all too well that it is a long and painful process. The British monarchy and its coronation rituals have an interesting history. Rituals which have been recently described as the last religious monarchical coronation rites in the West. But what they're not saying is that the British coronation ceremony is one of the most powerful symbols modern humanity has of the union between church and state. In America, this unholy union was permanently separated in the enshrinement of the First Amendment to the United States Constitution. Our Bill of Rights effectively built a wall between church and state in the very first of the amendments, which is first for a reason. As one of its co-authors, Thomas Jefferson, explained, that reason has to do with the reality that spirituality is a matter that should lay directly and solely between a person and God, as is every person's inherent natural rights, with no middlemen, and especially no government of middlemen. Now, we're talking about a time where in the not-too-distant past, ecclesiastical judges were determining what heresy is and then burning people at the stake for it. And today, if we had no First Amendment, I'm sure most of you can only imagine what beliefs would be required in order to not be burned at the stake. So, everything in this place we all share seeks equilibrium. This pull to balance energetic imbalances is inherent to the reality within which we exist and can be seen as a repeating pattern everywhere. As inequality grows all around the world, by the day, by the very second, deep contemplation of those ancient rites and symbols which seek to legitimize and formally enshrine inequality becomes crucial, perhaps now more than ever in modern human history.
Saying we are going to kowtow to them and we are going to bend and bow and kneel to them. Those days are done. The monarchy is a relic.
For those who are not familiar, King Charles III's upcoming coronation ceremony, a highly symbolic religious initiation ritual for a hereditary monarchy system that openly claims the divine right by God as its basis of power to rule over 2.4 billion subjects that are now under the British Commonwealth, will be the most viewed coronation ever in the modern known history of the crowning of a king or queen. It will be viewed by billions of people the world over. The coronation is taken extremely seriously and has quantum layers of symbolic meaning built throughout the entire set of rituals.
We, therefore, the Lords spiritual and temporal of this realm, and members of the House of Commons, together with other members of Her Late Majesty's Privy Council, and representatives of the realms and territories, aldermen and citizens of London, and others.
I was told yesterday by the police that I wasn't allowed to write that, and if I did, I'd be arrested.
So basically, there was a group of people with Charles is not my king sign, and they didn't show that during the Queen's,
correct.
You know, when she died, and they were going through the whole pageantry. But there were scores and scores of people from the video that I saw with Charles ain't my king.
That's
and
right.
One guy said, I was told not to show this sign, or if I did, I would be arrested.
Correct.
So freedom of speech is out the window.
That's correct. That
okay.
is correct. That's what's happening there. And, you know, that's going on. And I know the Christian groups are lining up over there to fight this, but it's moving forward. They're shutting down free speech at this time. Holding a sign, just holding a sign.
Right.
And you saw what happened to the guy, so.
Yep, yep. Okay.
...of symbolic meaning built throughout the entire set of rituals.
We, therefore, the Lords spiritual and temporal of this realm, and members of the House of Commons, together with other members of Her Late Majesty's Privy Council, and representatives of the realms and territories, aldermen and citizens of London, and others.
I was told yesterday by the police that I wasn't allowed to write that, and if I did, I'd be arrested.
Hereby, with one voice and consent of tongue and heart, pray. proclaim that the Prince Charles Philip Arthur George is now become our only lawful and rightful liege lord, Charles III.
In other words, this is not anything even remotely close to your average St. Patrick's Day parade with the floats down Main Street where they throw a few pieces of candy to the kids on a Saturday morning. What this ceremony means, especially at this point in time in the space we as human beings all share, absolutely matters to the future of humanity as a whole, regardless of whether or not you consider yourself a loyal and obedient subject
to whom we do acknowledge all faith and obedience
of a royal crown placed on the heads of a single family automatically due to birthright. A crown upheld on a pillar is precarious in the 21st century as the hereditary principle of what is claimed to be, quote, royal blood. The circulation of social energy is the true function of government, one that has been abused time and again for the whole of its history. In the post-coronavirus reality we all share, many of us all around the world have become all too painfully aware of what it feels like to be subjected to an egregious imbalance in this social contract. The energy bestowed upon and invested in the king and the church/government he becomes the head of is supposed to be concentrated and returned back to the people in equal measure. I don't know if you guys know that just over 100 years ago, King George V, for example, would attend agricultural shows to give his blessing. The king would physically go, he would bless the people, bless their crops, bless their livestock. When Charles goes to an agricultural show, like he did earlier this summer, just by the way, he asks the farmers what they're doing to achieve net zero. Going back further just a few hundred years, it was literally believed that the monarch, by virtue of his God-given divinity as, quote, the Lord's anointed, could lay his hands upon the sick and cure them. It was called touching for the king's evil, and records of it date back to King Edward the Confessor, whose reign began in 1042. And the practice of it actually continued up until the 18th century. 3 centuries on, and now according to British Heritage, accounts for the sovereign grant, which funds the monarchical household's official expenses, stated that subjects of the British Crown paid a whopping $102.4 million during 2021 to 2022 in order to fund the royals. That's a lot of financial energy of the average person in the kingdom being extracted and funneled up to the royal family. And it cannot be missed that we're living through a time when British citizens themselves are being told that they're going to have no choice but to pay a lot more for their energy this winter and beyond. It is now estimated that some 42% of British households may fall into what they're literally calling energy poverty this winter, leaving millions of the crown subjects financially unable to afford to light and heat their own homes. And that's 2 years after coronavirus, corona and virus both coming from Latin, corona meaning crown and virus meaning poison, one can't help but notice. 2 years after coronavirus triggered the largest transfer of wealth from the masses up to the elite circles of power at the top of our modern society the world over. British Prime Minister Liz Truss recently declared the beginning of the new Carolian Age, something Britain hasn't seen since Charles II ruled back in the 17th century. And the new king didn't have to be called Charles III, just by the way. He actually has 4 names.
Prince Charles Philip Arthur George.
According to custom, he could have chosen any single one of those for his regnal name. But he chose Charles. Charles' deep symbolic ties to his 2 preceding royal namesakes go well beyond a shared name. His first wife, Princess Diana, was descended from not one but 2 of Charles II's illegitimate heirs. In other words, even if Charles III had not made it to the throne, his son William, who is next in line, is a blood descendant of Charles II. So in any case, this post-Elizabethan time period was inevitably going to be a Carolian age, regardless of whether Charles himself took the throne or not. And this isn't like when prospective parents flip through a baby name book and see what they like. These names are of extreme symbolic significance in their ties to the line and power of the monarchy, powerfully linking that country's past to its present. And it's interesting when you consider that his name will be said countless millions of times on a daily basis in the media and households everywhere.
righty. That is the 11-minute mark.
Okay. Where do we start with this? First of all, she's right about what the crown means. Corona.
Right.
You know, that I want to address right away. Let me see here. He's trying to be mediator. If you understand Charles I, he wanted to be your mediator, right? Between you and God. Now we see that.
Right.
God's anointed. Now where do we hear that? You know, now. Oh, everywhere. They're God's anointed. Don't touch God's anointed,
sure.
Right? Okay.
Absolutely.
So, and 1 Timothy 2:5, for there is one God and one mediator between God and men, the man Christ Jesus. Verse 6, who gave himself a ransom for all to be testified in due time. If someone thinks they can be a mediator between you and God without Christ, then to me they're displaying antichrist behavior. They're trying to replace Christ. I'm not saying that they're the antichrist, but that is antichrist behavior. That's like the Pope. Is that not correct?
Right.
Doing
absolutely.
The same
that's
thing.
Antichrist behavior, yeah.
Yeah. In Victoria, England, there were two classes of people, rich and poor. You were either filthy rich or dirt poor. And I think they're heading in that direction again. And if they head in that direction, we will also. You know, they're dividing the classes. This is all this division going on. It has nothing to do with people. It has to do with separating according to wealth, you know, at the end of the day. They're dividing, and then they conquer. So now one of the things they were declaring when they were doing the declaration for King Charles, they mentioned serving him with consent of heart and tongue. That's willingly accepting him, whether you like it or not, and all faith. That's reserved for Christ. You know, that's who we put our faith in. You know, Charles is only the head, by name only, of the Church of England at this point, a denomination. So we're to put our faith in, you know, we're not to put our faith in a church, but we're to put our faith in Christ and his finished work at the cross. Now, and obedience was on there. But go ahead.
I'm sorry. It was only a couple of weeks ago that Charles was the head of nothing.
Yes, exactly. That's right.
I mean, he was the head of nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so now Mama dies, and now he's Charles III. Well,
yes.
only certain people are drinking that Kool-Aid. There was a lot of people with signs saying, he's not my king.
Yeah, and can you see the unrest that will happen as things change? I can already see it coming down the pike.
Right.
This unrest.
Absolutely.
You know.
Absolutely.
Especially in the part where they said, and obedience. They're to serve him.
Yeah.
You know, and obey him. He does not run the country. The prime minister does. You know. No one is called to, in this generation, as far as the monarchs go, no one is called to obey them. They are to serve the people, you know. And technically, he doesn't enforce or create any laws in that country. So why is he requesting that people obey him? You see what I'm saying?
Yep. It's a spiritual conditioning. See,
mm-hmm.
it's like in these Pentecostal churches where there's a bishop and they tell you, okay, whatever. Now, we know that the church belongs to Christ, but the bishop usurps Christ. And now it's
mm-hmm.
the bishop's vision. And it's what the bishop
correct.
Says. And
yes.
bow down and kiss the bishop's ring. And so it's just
mm-hmm.
a conditioning, preparing humanity to receive the Antichrist.
Correct.
See, the Roman Catholics are not going to have a problem accepting the Antichrist because they've already been accepting the Antichrist in the Pope.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
so
exactly.
It's going to be easy peasy.
Mm-hmm.
Because you got all these people and all these different groups already bowing to an individual. So that when the Antichrist
Correct.
Shows up with all his power and glory, and the dragon will give him his power, it's going to be easy. Easy. It's just they're conditioning people. And those that don't want to be conditioned, they kill. That's it. We eliminate you.
He's taking it, if you notice, though, with the thing with Charles here, he just took this to a whole new level in this short period of time. You see? The White Knight here is marching backwards. He took this to a whole new level. The Queen wouldn't dare, even though it was presumed that that's, you know, I mean, everybody that felt anything about the monarchy, you know, they loved her. They did, regardless of who she was. They loved her. A lot of people did. A lot of people, you know, don't. But to ask them for obedience, just outright, that they serve him, they're obedient, that they accept him no matter what, if they like him or not, and all faith, with all faith, he's just opened the door. You know, that's a new level. That's a new level, I think.
You don't have to look very far. I mean, his son Harry, he doesn't obey his father.
That's right.
So, I mean, so if the son doesn't obey the father, Charles III, why should you?
Gets no respect. Rodney
Beach. If you just look at it in a practical way, his son Harry has embarrassed him.
Mm-hmm.
And has given him no respect. So if Harry could do that, what does Harry know that we don't know?
Correct.
Right? So
correct.
And you don't have to know it. All you got to do is say, well, Harry doesn't respect him because his dad, in Harry's eyes, is a buffoon. That's all.
Mm-hmm.
So while the news media wants you to think, he's Charles III, bend the knee, kiss the... No, Harry doesn't do it.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
So you gotta have your thinking cap on. That's
correct.
All. That's all. You
because
just
he's trying
to
place himself in full authority over everything without a governing body behind him.
Right.
You see what I'm saying?
Sure.
And that's how the kings, remember, that's how the kings reigned years ago. And this takes the agenda to a whole new level. You know, which also shows us that prophecy is just moving forward.
Mm-hmm.
That's
right.
It, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But the king called, that thing called the king's gift of healing. You know, you have to think about this. I mean, how did the kings get the gift? If they have a different doctrine than that of Scripture, who's the gift giver? You know?
Sure. Sure.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Right. I never seen the queen heal anybody. She couldn't heal herself.
No, she couldn't heal her husband. She couldn't heal Diana. Right? Diana needed healing after that car accident. Charles needed healing after his brain evaporated. Andrew needed healing.
Yeah.
So, you know.
But you think of how the church is conditioned with all these words now. You see, this goes back to Charles the First. You know,
mm-hmm.
I mean, if not before, but if we're talking about Charles the First here, this all goes back. We're hearing these same words in the pulpit today.
Correct. Correct. Absolutely.
Where'd we get it? We didn't get it from Scripture. We didn't get this stuff from Scripture. But yet they're using these same words in the pulpit today that they used back when Charles the First tried to take over the entire country.
Right.
So, okay. So if you just go to 21:32, we'll get
now we're going to get into Charles the First, a little bit about Charles the First. I took this in bits because there's a lot to digest here.
Okay. All right, here it is.
Okay.
That ultimately went down in history for its reputation as a tool of political and social oppression, that wielded arbitrary power, was capable of levying accusations and punishing those in their inquisition with or without the pretense of law. Even the U.S. Supreme Court has noted that the existence of the Star Chamber was a direct inspiration for the Fifth Amendment of the Bill of Rights. For example, the Star Chamber indicted Puritan minister Alexander Layton for authoring a book that referred to the Anglican institution of bishops as satanic. Layton's torture and abuse included 15 weeks in irons, in solitary confinement in an unheated cell open to snow and rain, described as being full of rats and mice. His hair fell out and his skin began peeling off. He was tied to a stake and whipped 36 times on the naked skin on his back with a heavy cord. He was placed in a pillory for 2 hours in the November snow. He was branded in the face. His nose was slit. His ears were cut off. And then he was sentenced to life in imprisonment. In fact, it's incredibly disgusting just how many stories there are about people's ears being cut off as punishment by the church under Charles I's reign. As Americans, we hear quite a bit in school about the pursuit of religious freedom by these early pilgrims and people coming over to the new American colonies. Not so much about the ears being cut off, though. Paying a spiritual tax through mandatory religious worship as a, quote, duty, just for being a British subject to the crown of an absolute monarch tyrant, has to be one of the highest forms of taxation without representation or consent that's even possible. Because it's a tax on your soul. It goes against your own conscience, your own beliefs. If you go through this Grand Remonstrance document more thoroughly than this summation permits, you will find corollaries to basically all of the first 10 amendments to the American Bill of Rights all over this thing. There's a long, thoroughly documented history of monarchs violating these inherent rights long before they were enshrined and put to paper after the American Revolutionary War. Obviously, there was a buildup here. Almost forgot to mention that news and media were only allowed under royal license, and all information, especially about the crown, was tightly controlled. When it comes to the Grand Remonstrance, it's surprising Charles I even felt the need to reply at all. But in his short response rejecting the remonstrance, the king appeared to be the most upset that the House had directly printed copies for public distribution, noting that he was, quote, very sensible of the disrespect, end quote, of allowing the commoners to even know what had been said at all, than he was about actually responding to any of the specific allegations, because, again, as a divine absolute monarch, he didn't even feel like he was required to answer to these accusations, or answer to any other human being on earth at all whatsoever. So the Grand Remonstrance, because it dared to question the king in writing in such a public way and raise these issues and confront him, was a groundbreaking document. And as his relationship with Parliament continued to deteriorate after it was issued, Charles I raised an army. In response, the Parliament called for the militia. A civil war ultimately ensued, and the king was captured, put on house arrest, and then put on trial for high treason. He was charged with the, quote, wicked designs, wars, and evil practices that have been and are carried on for the personal advancement and upholding of a personal interest of will, power, and pretended prerogative to himself and his family against the public interest, common right, liberty, and peace of the people of this nation, end quote. So his charges were based around the dynamic of power in a fundamental way that addresses the philosophical points. The indictment held that Charles I was found guilty of all the treasons, murders, rapines, burning spoils, desolations, damages, and mischiefs to this nation, acted and committed in the said wars or occasioned thereby. Some 300,000 people had to die during the Civil War to get this point across that absolute monarchy is not okay. This is like 6% of the nation's population at the time, a very high price to pay. The king was found guilty and beheaded, and more importantly, the point made its way into history. But he was then replaced by Oliver Cromwell and his version of the Commonwealth, which was run by a military dictatorship. And in attempting to correct the imbalance brought about by the system of absolute monarchy, embodied quite literally by Charles I, the Puritans aspired towards a sort of democratic theocracy where the only distinctions among men were moral and religious, and there was no law but their interpretation of God's word. Puritans canceled all holidays as superstitious, and the theater, where they considered actresses to be whores, was closed down. In attempting to correct for the imbalance caused by absolute monarchy and what they felt were the loose morals of the age, they then overcorrected and took the imposition of their brand of religion and morality way too far in the opposite direction, ultimately showing themselves to be just as intolerant and dictatorial as those who had previously shown intolerance to them. And that overcorrection allowed for a vacuum of the people's sentiments to support the return of monarchy just after it had been brought down.
All right, let's stop it there because I'm sure Sister Marie has comments.
Yes. Where did you start that at 11 to go to 2132?
Oh, I went to 27. No. I started at the 23-minute mark you told me to.
Oh, no, I said stop at the 20.
I apologize. Okay, I got to go back
to
11.
That's okay. No, you don't. We'll go back and talk about it because basically he did get some points because my notes were way ahead of yours.
I'm sorry. I thought you started at the 23. I'm sorry.
No, okay. That's okay. We'll just okay. Now we have to remember that the Queen is sovereign. That they were talking about Charles, and I think he got his point across, so we won't worry about it. Charles or the Queen was considered sovereign or was then over 14 nations. That passes on to Charles now. You see? So he's actually a sovereign over not only his own, but 14 other nations. That's 15, bro. Think about it. This is also a reminder of what the Puritans went through. According to the Bible, we will suffer persecution, and certainly the Puritans did. However, they did take it. I would agree with them. Under Oliver Cromwell, they went the other way. The Puritans went into legalism instead of man's own conscience in a lot of ways. So there wasn't a balance there. There was no hard and soft virtues. There was just, you know, they went from lawlessness into legalism. So, you know, I was thinking about that, and people, you know, that are begging for law and order, that's what we're begging for. Would it be okay, or should it be right to ask for balance, just balance? Because
right,
I can see this going in the opposite direction. That's exactly what happened. They went from lawlessness, and it wasn't the lawlessness of the people. It was the government that became lawless. And then they went straight into legalism to the point that the people said, wait a minute, we can't deal with that. We're going to go back to the lawlessness because the legalism was so strict. Do you see what I'm saying? And I got messed up on my notes there because so it's interesting, you know, the people were persecuted who rejected his authority. They confiscated the guns so people couldn't protect their families. There was a tax on everything, including your soul. That's what Rome does already.
Right.
They controlled information from the media. They lacked accountability to anyone. Is that not what we're seeing today?
Absolutely.
I mean, that's exactly.
Absolutely.
So is Charles pushing for the same, exactly the same thing that the, you know.
Right.
That Charles I did. Because that's how it went. After that, after, you know, all this stuff happened, what he did is he ended up
we look at the lawlessness, and then it went into legalism. I can see that happening today. I can see us going from lawlessness into legalism to the point that people want the lawlessness back because the legalism is so strict that, you know, no one could abide by it, literally no one. And with the same things he did to get it to that point, when he started persecuting the people who rejected his authority, you know, and confiscated the guns and put taxes on everything, I mean, lack of accountability to anyone, this is what Charles is trying to accomplish.
Right, right.
Think about that. So
I could see it. I could see it. I mean, when the police walk up to somebody and say to them, don't show that handwritten sign that Charles is not your king or else you'll get arrested, that's the smoking gun right there. That's,
exactly.
You know, what more proof do you need that they're going to throw you in jail just because you said, you know, Harry doesn't respect Charles and neither do I? So, you know.
So my question is, and I think I have the answer, is this government, did they allow lawlessness to take place to such an extent that it drives us into legalism?
That's a possibility. That's a possibility. Yeah.
So if we look at the past, we can see what they're playing for the future. This is the game.
Sure. They've done it before.
Yep.
They've done it before, yeah, absolutely.
Charles did it before. Remember, I questioned why he kept that name.
Sure.
And it wasn't long before you find out, you know. It's amazing. It's
amazing. he couldn't take moron because Jensen Franklin already has that, so he had to go for Charles, like Charlie Brown. Yeah, he, you know, for Charlie
Think
Brown.
Of that.
But yeah, so it is what it is.
Yeah.
King Chuck, you know,
okay.
and Charlie Brown's favorite Christmas, Peppermint Patty calls Charlie Brown Chuck. So you have King Chuck the Third, you know.
Oh, sausage fingers, that's what they call him.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Over there. Yeah.
All right.
Okay, wherever we're at now.
We're at 25 minutes.
Okay, we're at 25 minutes. You can take that to 32. Don't start at 32.
Take it
to 32:12. Okay?
Okay, you got it. You got it.
Okay.
His charges were based around the dynamic of power in a fundamental way that addresses the philosophical points. The indictment held that Charles I was found guilty of all the treasons, murders, rapings, burning spoils, desolations, damages, and mischiefs to this nation, acted and committed in the said wars or occasioned thereby. Some 300,000 people had to die during the Civil War to get this point across that absolute monarchy is not okay. This is like 6% of the nation's population at the time, a very high price to pay. The king was found guilty and beheaded, and more importantly, the point made its way into history. But he was then replaced by Oliver Cromwell and his version of the Commonwealth, which was run by a military dictatorship. And in attempting to correct the imbalance brought about by the system of absolute monarchy, embodied quite literally by Charles I, the Puritans aspired towards a sort of democratic theocracy where the only distinctions among men were moral and religious, and there was no law but their interpretation of God's word. Puritans canceled all holidays as superstitious, and the theater, where they considered actresses to be whores, was closed down. In attempting to correct for the imbalance caused by absolute monarchy and what they felt were the loose morals of the age, they then overcorrected and took the imposition of their brand of religion and morality way too far in the opposite direction, ultimately showing themselves to be just as intolerant and dictatorial as those who had previously shown intolerance to them. and that overcorrection allowed for a vacuum of the people's sentiments to support the return of monarchy just after it had been brought down.
But the monarchy would be restored under his son, Charles II, a restoration which came complete with a touch of the mythical. The story about how Charles II escaped England unscathed as his father was dethroned has gone down as historical fact, even though it sounds like a fairy tale as good as anything Disney has ever concocted. The story goes that the future king had to hide from Cromwell's soldiers in an oak tree on September 6, 1651. After a failed bid to regain the throne at Worcester in the final conflict of the Civil War. This particular tree later came to be known as the Royal Oak and the basis of a new government holiday and holy day within the Church of England called Oak Apple Day, May 29, 1660, the day of Charles II's 30th birthday, the very day they perfectly timed for his return to England to resurrect the monarchy 11 years after his dad was beheaded. If Charles III's name wasn't a significant enough symbolic connection, back on September 6, 2001, he even participated in a ceremony where the man who would become Charles III planted a descendant acorn from Charles II's royal oak right next to his predecessor on exactly the 350th anniversary of Charles II hiding in the oak tree from the soldiers. When Charles II was brought back, he didn't just restore the monarchy, however. He resurrected the aristocracy's political power in Britain in one fell swoop. The coronation was put off until St. George's Day the following year, the feast day of the patron saint of England, a powerful and important British holiday indeed to host what some still consider to this day to be the most consequential coronation ever to take place in British history. With the royal hereditary monarchy reinstated, certain royalists most loyal to Charles' father were rewarded with dukedoms, such as William Cavendish, Earl of Newcastle, who wrote a treatise on how Charles II should go about ensuring that the restoration took. And it's important to look at this so you can see the mindset through which this monarchy was being restored under Charles II. In the view of royalists of the time, the worst evil above all others in the attempt at abolishing monarchy and establishing a more republican form of government had apparently come from what they referred to as, quote, the mixing of classes. A set of two historical volumes entitled England Under King Charles II, published in 1934 by Oxford University at the Clarendon Press, sums it up. Quote, "The immediate danger to the newly restored monarchy came from the towns, especially from the metropolis. London should therefore be disarmed and controlled by two forts, one on each side of the Thames. These precautions with a well-fortified tower would serve to keep the commercial classes in their place." As for commerce, the Duke stated that when everything is cheap, there's scarcity of money, and when everything is dear, there's plenty of money. It might therefore be deduced that it was good policy to keep prices, and therefore rents, high. Sound familiar? With means of physical control in place, quote, "the next thing was to set in order religion. Lay preaching must be discouraged. Schoolmasters should be such only as the bishop's license. The parson is to preach weekly from a printed sermon, this being the work of either a bishop or a person approved by him. The episcopate thus provides the ruler with intermediaries through whom he can exercise control over both clergy and laity. But this is not the sole advantage of the Church of England for the purposes of statecraft. Religion, in fact, must be the first concern of the statesman, because the enthusiasm of the common people breeds revolution." The Duke wrote, quote, "the Bible in English under every weaver's and chambermaid's arms hath done us much hurt."
There you go.
Amazing, isn't it? Caused them
Amazing.
Harm? The people that knew their Bibles caused
sure.
them much harm.
Absolutely.
So lay preaching was not acceptable. It had
mm-hmm.
to be licensed. So think about the 501c3 now.
Right.
Where the government can control what comes out of the pulpit. If they want
mm-hmm.
to.
Sure.
They can control. And what about, you know, the mixing of classes? They opposed that. So think about that
right.
now. You
mm-hmm.
know, what happened to our small businesses and capitalism?
Mm-hmm.
There's
right.
a division of classes. The rich get richer, the poor get poorer. That's the same thing that happened when the second Charles come in.
Yeah. Second Charles had a plan.
The first Charles, we see everything that we've seen happening, or what Charles is trying to take it to. We see that
mm-hmm.
clearly. Second
right.
Charles, we can also see that. What you know, where that's headed.
Right.
So you think about it. All you have to do is look back in history.
It's right in front
paper.
Of you. It's right
yep.
in front of you. Yes, indeed.
Yep.
Yes, indeed.
So
wow.
now we know why Charles is Charles.
Yeah, sure.
I mean,
and
just
not,
these two monarchs there, he's following both those. Go ahead.
Right. Yeah, Charles is Charles and not moron.
Yeah.
Yeah, he took that name. And think about it. He went to the guy's oak tree, supposed oak tree, took a little acorn from that oak tree, and then planted his own.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
In other words,
that's how we
I
have
am
royal
a
royal oak.
Yeah, exactly. And in the Bible, if you trace the word oak tree,
mm-hmm.
everywhere where there's an oak tree, there's death.
Mm.
So that's, you know, that's...
That's interesting. That's
yeah.
symbolic. If I,
mm-hmm.
I'm writing that down.
Yeah. Sure.
Oh.
Absolutely.
Wow. Good
yep.
point. Good point.
Yep. So,
hmm.
there you go.
Okay. Where are we at? 32.
You told me where to stop at. 32:12. That's where I stopped.
Okay. We can take it to 40:58 if you want.
40:58. Okay. Here we go.
Yeah.
The power of education was also attacked for raising common consciousness to a level that was at complete odds with a system ruled by the marriage of church and state under a hereditary monarch presiding over a society that was basically a caste system, where the aristocracy wanted to make sure class distinctions were kept clear and the privileges of the nobility maintained. Quote, there are too many students at the universities. If the colleges had but half their numbers, these would be better fed and better taught. The same is true of the grammar schools, where syntaxes are well thumbed, while horse and plow are neglected. Consequently, the schools should limit their numbers, for their only justification is that they serve the needs of the church and those of the law and merchants. Education has its uses, but like everything else, there can be too much of it, end quote. Continuing on the unholy wedding of church and state, the Duke notes, quote, with the help of the church and the law, Englishmen would be kept in order, and a recurrence of such an episode as the interregnum made impossible. Thus, the bishops in their diocese should act as intelligencers, reporting to the government, while in the universities there should be spies to search out the unorthodox and the seditious. But I'm sure you probably think, listening to this, that none of these attitudes still applies today in contemporary society, right? Under Charles II, the Duke goes on to talk about how parliaments are only justifiable if the king was able to control them. Period. The permission to allow weekly news was also a problem because, quote, these journals filled the minds of the ignorant with their inflammatory domestic and foreign intelligence, end quote.
Paper, mister?
The king would have his invitation-only high mask rituals at Whitehall, as his father had done, And the derisive air quote meaner people out in the country would have their low-level folk rituals of maypole, Morris dancing, hobby horse, wassail at Christmas to keep them happy in their places within this society. As the Duke noted that the quote poisonous humors against the king and his system could be sweated out through the folk rituals. The keynote of Newcastle's social philosophy was, quote, ceremony and order with force governs all and keeps every man and everything within the circle of their own conditions. A societal loop, therefore, that most of society was doomed to. The Duke noted that under Elizabeth I's reign, just by the way, the Queen would appear in public gorgeously attired, pronouncing her benediction, God bless you, my good people. And the Duke highlighted the fact that these words were of no great matter and cost nothing to the crown. Quote, yet I assure your majesty, it went far with the people. The restoration came with the dissolution of the convention parliament shortly after Charles II's coronation, and the new Cavalier Parliament, made up of mostly royalists and Anglicans, was assembled, which went on to pass acts and require oaths to secure Anglican dominance and conformity in the nation. These acts came to be known as the Clarendon Codes after Edward Hyde, Earl of Clarendon, a man who the text pointed out believed that religion was not a spiritual experience, but what he called a, quote, social cement that bound the subject of the king tightly to his place in the world. There's a theme here. They went on to pass several acts, and I think it's kind of important to note what these were. The Corporation Act of 1661 required municipal office holders to swear allegiance to the church, thus restricting the holding of any public office solely to members of the Church of England. The Act of Uniformity of 1662 made the Anglican Book of Common Prayer compulsory. In the new version required under Charles II, they literally sainted his father Charles I as a martyr and made a required day of prayer to be held annually on the day of his execution as a reminder of the wicked evil done to such a goodly king. The church also created what came to be known as Oak Apple Day, as mentioned previously, celebrated annually on Charles II's birthday, in which it was the duty of all members of the church to carry out festivities energetically renewing the resurrection of the monarchy under Charles II each year. The holiday was officially discontinued in the 19th century, but it's still celebrated at some churches and institutions across England even today. And some churches would even haul a giant oak branch up to the top of their church in order to symbolically reiterate who and what is at the head of it. This is one of the prayers they added in the 1662 Book of Common Prayer for Thanksgiving for the return of Charles II. And there's an epistle in here, down here. I'm not going to read the whole thing, but it says down here, submit yourselves to every ordinance of man for the Lord's sake, whether it be to the king as supreme or unto governors, for so is the will of God. Honor all men, love the brotherhood, fear God, honor the king. The Conventicle Act of 1664 prohibited religious assemblies of more than five people, unless they were officially under the auspices of the Church of England. The 5 Mile Act of 1665 expressly prohibited non-conforming clergymen from coming within 5 miles of the parish they'd been banished from for not conforming to Anglicanism. While the theater was brought back, which had been done away with under Cromwell, only those with theater licenses granted by the king were allowed to perform. And what they performed largely consisted of symbolic reenactments or celebrations of the restoration of the monarchy and aristocracy system. And for those of you who understand the true power of theater, you'll understand why that is. Just like his father Charles I, in the end Charles II dissolved Parliament in 1679 and ruled all by himself until he died of an apoplectic fit, which may or may not have been induced by poison, in 1685. 2 years before his death, at a meeting of convocation of the University of Oxford in July 1683, a decree was passed condemning certain, quote, pernicious books and damnable doctrines. Among the beliefs they condemned were the idea that civil authority is derived from the people, that there's a contract between the ruler and his subjects, and that a king who becomes a tyrant forfeits the obedience of his subjects. So in other words, none of that. If you believed any of those three things, those are damnable doctrines. Clarendon himself made no secret of the fact that he and his fellow royalists believed the rebellion that ended Charles I's reign could not be wholly destroyed until the king's inherent regal powers and prerogative were fully restored. The king's power was believed so extensive that its limits, quote, should not be inquired into, according again to this Oxford University published history book. Quote, its activities were also entitled to the protection of secrecy, for it was the law of the land that no one might expose to public knowledge anything concerning the government without a king's license. To the people in positions of actual power, the king wielded supreme jurisdiction in the state, while all others had merely delegated jurisdiction. The king alone was the supreme governor in all ecclesiastical and temporal causes, and the king was ordained by God. Both
Let's stop it there for a moment for comments.
Okay. Education. They didn't want the people educated. So later they infiltrated the universities with Marxists. Remember that? So the Marxists are well educated and financially, they have a lot of financial backing.
Right.
Mixing the church and state kept the people in order, but division among the people kept the elite in power. So you see where capitalism is a big problem for them today.
Right.
You know.
Right.
And, you know, the smaller businesses are gone, basically. And I found it interesting that in 1665, there was a plague that happened that wiped out a lot of people during that time.
Mm-hmm. Right.
One whole village, I know, I've sent you pictures of that. The people
right.
died in 1666, which I found amazing, you know. But the plague actually hit in 1665, I believe. You know, what they call social cement, we could call social justice now. You
right,
know,
right.
swearing allegiance to the church,
mm-hmm.
and it's going to be to Charles now.
Sure.
So I'm not sure if that genealogy tree they have is not their tree of life. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So,
all right.
And they also
so,
had a rule of five, by the way, and that was not gathering in groups. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, pretty much like COVID. Don't get together.
Mm-hmm. The banning
don't,
book?
Don't get together with your family for Thanksgiving. If you get together,
right.
we're going to send in troopers into your house to remove them.
That's not new, by the way. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah. That's
you know,
amazing.
Now they have the banning of books. We have that now. We're seeing that now. Believing in personal choice is a damnable doctrine, and it doesn't
mm-hmm.
fit their agenda. That's exactly what we see.
Right. Yeah, it's a replay.
It's a replay.
Yeah, yeah.
Different wrapping paper.
Sure, sure. Okay, we're at the 40-minute mark. I got to take it to 42, right?
Take it as far as you want now.
Okay.
You can stop it as you like.
All right.
Charles I and II's reigns encompassed the last two modern attempts to uphold outright absolute monarchy in England. But we must take note of the fact that they also oversaw the greatest shifts in mass consciousness of men towards freedom from this unjust and outdated system of rule. The Magna Carta of 1215 was an earlier version, but did not subject the king to the rule of the people the way that Charles I and II ultimately would. Absolute monarchy died completely during the Glorious Revolution of 1688, which led to the 1689 British Bill of Rights, establishing a so-called limited monarchy in England. Just 100 years before the American Revolution and Bill of Rights based on it would come to be here in America.
As I stand before you today, I cannot help but feel the weight of history which surrounds us.
Charles III will oversee a kingdom much larger than that of his two namesake predecessors combined. With some 2.4 billion subjects spread across 14 nations. But he's also coming to full power at a key moment in human history, during a massive transformation shifting us into a global society. And it was Charles III who announced the Great Reset at Davos in 2020 during the crises of the pandemic. The symbolic importance of this cannot be overstated. But it has led up to this moment that's been decades in the making. Royalty, the continuation of monarchy in a modern world of democracies, quote unquote. Even the British crown has found itself on the defensive. But in reality, the same arguments against its relevancy in a modern world, in fact, sustain its power and influence under the global system that's being set up. This archaic and obviously outmoded form of government is oddly perfect for a postmodern, post-industrial world based around a vast empire of commerce, planned economic production, personality influence, and media framing basically all discussions. And moving in this direction, communication has tended to produce a dominant image, exemplified even by the visage of the Queen, who's been such a chief product of the post-war TV broadcasting era that she almost became a sort of base signal of fidelity, a carrier image, the figurehead of a unifying message broadcast from the top down out across to the masses through the transmission of light.
All of that very much appealed to me as a 10-year-old child, because that coronation in this country ushered in the television age. People, for the first time, bought a television. My parents did, for £100, an HMV black and white set with a 12-inch screen. And somehow we managed to get 17 people from the little street we lived in into our back room, watching it for hours on end.
1.7 billion were there for his birth. 220 countries tuned in for his first step. And as he grew, so did the technology. An entire human life recorded on an intricate network of hidden cameras and broadcast live and unedited 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
Thus, the British monarchy has quietly adapted in form and function to span the total of not just the physical globe, but the noosphere, penetrating the often media-generated and kept mental life of the population.
Well, you know, you got to think of Satan behind all of this, Satan propping up all of these different traditions. You got the Catholic tradition, you have the Anglican tradition, and Satan propping all of these things up because he's going to bring the Antichrist, right? So, I mean, he's got to keep he's got to keep these institutions alive. Because the Antichrist is going to use the techniques and the methodology and the strategy and the playbook of these monarchies to run his own seven-year reign, right? I mean, you know, it just, you can see why this continuity, you know, why is the Roman Catholic Church still around? Well, because it's a tool of Satan to bring the false prophet. And why is a monarchy like England still around? Well, it's a tool of Satan, perhaps, to bring in the governmental Antichrist. The false prophet and the Antichrist, right? I mean, just, you know, it's a plausible conclusion.
Yes, it is.
Right? Because what other monarchy? I mean, you have what's that? Grace Kelly, was it Grace Kelly, the actress? Wasn't she like the Queen of Monaco or something? Right. Okay.
Yes.
So who cares about Monaco? Nobody. When was the last time you heard anything from Monaco?
Been a while.
So, It's been, listen, nobody cares about those other European monarchies. There's only one that's standing strong. I mean, we just spent 2 weeks of television coverage of following a corpse on TV.
Yeah, exactly.
And
exactly.
And they were playing peekaboo. Where is it now? Where's Waldo? You know, where's the casket?
Yeah.
Has anybody seen it today? Right? Has anybody seen it today? I mean, the news coverage was insane.
Yep.
Insane.
And think about Harry's wedding. Same thing.
Right.
And think about at Christmas every year, the big thing in England is to listen to the Queen's speech. This has been, remember we did that show about how television programs people, you know?
Right.
The brainwashing.
Sure.
I mean, this all fits in, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
It's amazing.
Absolutely. Okay. Yeah. Here's Nora O'Donnell on the Queen.
The CBS News special report, I'm Nora O'Donnell. We are just moments away from one of the most majestic and historic things that many of us will see in our lifetime.
And royals reinvented for the transition from the post-war era to the post-industrial one have the potential to flourish in a tech-laden age where imagination is supposed to run free, but somehow intermediaries dominate the experience and always take a cut and have this controlling position. And so these royals are regenerating, as they have before in past ages, parallel with the expansion and evolution of transnational corporate business, of central banks, of merchant interest in the age of globalism, and under this global economy, bending around the matrix of sovereign nations, finding power in a different way in an end run around constitutional limits. Ambassadors of a global corporation that sees itself as one broad kingdom with no borders. Famously, the sun never set on the British Empire. The sun also would never set on this planetary empire. And so the bounds of powers, both potential and actual, expand effortlessly into an unkept, ungoverned frontier. Rules that are yet to be codified, restrictions that are yet to be levied. The United Nations and its predecessor, the League of Nations, et cetera, they're all just frameworks. They're mock-ups. They're trial runs that operate as a shell game within the rings of power. But they shape the conversation enough to deter and wall off growth into any other direction. It gives an indication of the governance, but the jurisdiction for that governance is not restricted.
This collusion between big tech and big government to censor dissenting voices, even the dissenting voices of scientists. Listen here to Melissa Fleming. She's the Undersecretary for Global Communications at the UN.
We partnered with Google, for example. If you Google climate change, you will, at the top of your search, you will get all kinds of UN resources. So we're becoming much more proactive. You know, we own the science, and we think that the world, you know, should know it. We own the science, and we think that the world should know it. We own the science.
With an earthly threat as pretext, imminent and all-encompassing, there are nascent jurisdictions which supersede the limits of nations and constitutional governing bodies that are now thriving. Like the British Empire before it, a global commonwealth has been placed over the local groupings of power. Act locally, think globally. You know the message. A supranational checkpoint that is beyond popular will, compatible with cooperative tributaries and vassals, yet capable of disrupting what won't be allowed in the new future being shaped right now. Take, for example, the Netherlands during this global reset. Prime Minister Mark Rutte, who's been a regular WEF attendee, has ushered in new laws in his nation and set up a new cabinet position to take on the environmental issue of drastically reducing nitrogen levels.
Klaus Schwab's golden pin-up boy, Prime Minister Mark Rutte, is busy fulfilling the agenda of the World Economic Forum's Great Reset.
If they want to go to the goal, They're going to reduce 50% of the farmers here in Holland. And that's only the farming.
And the sudden, forceful nature of these laws is disrupting the economy.
We're also now getting reports that Italian farmers are rising up to protest in Rome. We are not slaves, we are farmers. We cannot make ends meet. But it's not just Italian farmers. Polish farmers are now protesting. So too are Spanish farmers, as too are disgruntled German farmers.
Shutting off food supply and production, but also jobs, and it's totally upended the status quo with very little notice.
This is taking place everywhere, and you can slate it all home to insane globalist climate change policies.
New Zealand has announced a welfare scheme that would see a tax introduced on emissions from birthing farm animals. The move is part of the country's plan to tackle climate change.
An emissions tax to reduce greenhouse gases, for better out than in, will soon be costing farmers. New Zealand's Prime Minister has unveiled a world-first strategy to tax emissions from burps and urination produced by farm animals. To measure emissions, animals are placed in animal-friendly respiration chambers. Gas output is measured over 2 days through automated systems.
So pretty upset would be a mild understatement. The message I'm getting from farmers is we must oppose this.
So there's been a massive backlash, protests, nearly an uprising, and yet a firm hand that has been deaf to their pleas. It's purely monarchical. It's a new form of monarchy.
Yeah, I mean, how do you stop the raccoons from passing gas and the brown and black bears from passing gas? And it's not just the poor cows.
Right, it's ridiculous.
Listen, you got foxes in the woods passing gas. You got turkeys passing gas. You got wolves passing gas. You got beavers passing gas. Everything passes gas.
Mm-hmm.
Everything. Right?
No,
I mean,
it's just the craziness of it all that people actually believe that. That's a, you know.
Sure.
It's been, you know. Who upholds the world? You know? They're saying,
right.
No. We have to step in and save the world. And people
Paul
buy
Noah.
That. And they buy out. Yes.
Noah is responsible for climate change. He took all those animals and he put them in the ark.
Yes, exactly. He didn't die in there.
I'm telling you.
Is it crazy?
This is insanity.
Mm-hmm.
Insanity.
Yep.
Insanity.
There's.
Wow.
Well,
all
you know,
right,
it was Charles who announced Klaus Schwab's Great Reset for the World Economic Forum at Davos during the pandemic.
That should tell the Brits everything. That should tell the Brits everything. And here's the thing.
And remember, the royals are German. They're of German origin.
Right.
So think
from their daddy's side, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, from her side, too. I mean, down the line, yeah. You look at Victoria, you know, go back and just go back as far as Victoria.
Right, right.
And see, they all married. See, that's why they're looking for that DNA. You see what I'm saying?
Yep. Okay.
I don't think we have it.
No. I have chipmunk DNA. I have chipmunk.
Yeah, I have Puritan DNA, so I'm gonna end up like they did probably.
Absolutely. Burnt at the stake. When they burn you at the stake, I wonder if they're gonna ask you, Sister Marie, do you want medium rare or well done? And you're gonna have to pick one of those.
And you know it's going to be well done.
Okay. Here's more.
And so at the level above that, for Charles III, the crown monarch, until quite recently and for the majority of his life, the Prince of Wales, this has meant nourishing countless organizations, repeating himself ad nauseum, using his prestige to get this agenda set in place. And through a half century of involvement with the United Nations, with Davos, and with all their spinoffs and counterparts, he's developed this type of forceful nurturing to address these environmental concerns and, you know, make a campaign to rehabilitate the earth and push for these kind of policies like we've seen in the Netherlands. And it basically amounts to what appears to be Charles's core belief in himself.
We are reaching a global tipping point, as it has been mentioned many times here, in areas that are so close to the heart of His Royal Highness.
Or at least in the reflection that he perceives in the mirror as a kind of quasi-savior of the world.
With a growing global population creating ever-increasing demand on the planet's finite resources, we have to reduce emissions urgently.
What is he talking about, the planet's finite resources? Let me tell you something. When you leave, you look at a map of New York State. Just look at a map of New York State. And 9 to 10 million people are in the five boroughs. Now, when you look at the map, that's the lower tip.
Right.
The lower tip of New York State has any given day, 8 to 10 million people, 8 to 10 million in the city proper. That's Bronx, Brooklyn, Manhattan, Queens, Staten Island. That's the five boroughs, right? The moment you leave the Bronx and you start going towards White Plains, the rest of the state is all country.
Yes.
Everywhere you go, it's just mainly country. Listen, when I go from my house to the dentist, my wife found this dentist about an hour away. From my house to the dentist, I'm going all through country.
Mm-hmm.
There's acres and acres and acres of land nobody's touching. So when this guy says, we're running out of resources, what are you talking about? In my state alone, there are, I would say, millions of acres, pristine.
Yes.
No one's cut a tree there in years.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't tapped the resources. Even,
that's
and
correct.
I'm sure, you know, the one time that I went outside of London, and they took me to this place. I don't remember. Maybe if someone mentions a town, I could. It was a seaport town, and I remember leaving London on the train. We were on the train, and I'm just going through farmland after farmland after farmland after
That's
farmland.
Right.
And I'm saying, who lives here? It's like, and you know this. In London, what we call parks, what do they call parks in London? What do they call those things?
Parks?
No, they have a name for them.
I'm not sure. I mean,
okay, the parks in London, you know, like a place where you go play with your dog and throw a frisbee.
Oh,
what
yeah,
do you call those?
Yeah.
Well,
we just call them parks, but, you know, I mean.
Okay, my friends called them something else, and it wasn't hammocks. It was something else. Anyway, the parks in
Hamlets?
London are huge. They're
yes.
huge.
Yes.
I went to two of them. I said, this is your park? I said, we have a park like that
outdoor
in
venues?
New York City?
Do they call them outdoor venues? Like, you know,
No.
A venue?
No, there was a certain name that they had to it.
See, because there's, okay. Well,
yeah,
we would say parks at the north. So.
Right. Well, when I was taken there, and they say, you call them parks, but we call them this. I can't remember offhand.
Oh, okay.
I went there and I said, this is big or even bigger than Central Park.
Mm-hmm.
And Central Park is huge. It's
right.
huge.
Yeah.
So what is this guy talking about, untapped resources? You go to the Amazon, right? There are millions of acres of jungle that have not been touched. People don't even know what's in there.
Right.
So wow. What is he talking about?
You know,
untapped resources.
They, the people, most of the dukes and duchesses own the land around housing estates, you know, where you
sure.
have a housing estate. The people are all crowded in the housing there, and in between there and maybe the next village, you have nothing but an abundance of land, and that's all owned by the Duke and the Duchess and, you know,
sure.
of that
Absolutely.
Area.
Absolutely.
And even you can tell by the door, because the door color makes a difference of who owns the land. Like if it's
mm-hmm.
a green door, you know, that's
right.
the, you know, Duchess or Duke's property. So
right.
essentially, most of the places they're put into are, you know, a little local, and they own all the rest of the land. The people really, unless they have a farm there, don't really own, you know, the land
sure.
around them. If they do it, you know, it's a very small area.
Mm-hmm.
But there's property that's still owned by the dukes and duchesses of the monarchy there, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so
yeah.
Wentworth,
untapped
you know,
land.
That's a local.
Think about this.
To me.
Bill Gates is buying all that farmland. What's he doing with
mm-hmm.
it? Nothing. Not right now, at
right.
least.
Right.
So this, I mean, there is, if you go through, if you take a drive through the Taconic Parkway, which is the back way on how to get down to New York City, you pass the Donald J. Trump, it's not called Forest, it's called the Donald J. Trump. Donald Trump, the 45th president of the United States, he donated like 1,000 acres of woodlands. There's a big sign. Enter
wow.
into the Donald J. Trump. And this was long before he was president.
Right.
I mean, there's, listen, when you talk about land that's not being used in New York State, oh, my
right.
goodness. It's massive.
Yeah.
Massive.
That's right.
So
that's how it is
says,
in North England, too. You know, same
right.
thing.
Sure.
You'll have
so,
a
yeah,
village, little village
yeah.
there with a few people, and then you have acres and acres and acres of land in between you and the next village.
There you go.
Who owns that?
There you,
the Duke
there you
and
go.
Duchess.
Right. There
yeah.
you go.
Mm.
All right, here's Mr. Charles. We're running out of resources. But notice, he's not running out of resources. Is he running out of resources?
You know, he sat back and let himself be. They've made jokes about him for years of being a nobody. It was going to pass to William and all this kind of stuff. So right now he's acting like, you know, the one that's been the little kid who's been picked on his whole life.
Right. Sure.
And now he's a lawyer, you know, type of thing.
Right. Oh, my goodness. We're out of time. We got 6
minutes.
Oh, we are. All right, let me play a few minutes here. Let me play a few minutes. Hold on.
Okay.
And take action to tackle the carbon already in the atmosphere.
Leading to a broader effort, Charles III's crusades, if you will, his God-given mission, his great work for this environmental stuff.
The COVID-19 pandemic has shown us just how devastating a global cross-border threat can be. Climate change and biodiversity loss are no different. In fact, they pose an even greater existential threat to the extent that we have to put ourselves on what might be called a warlike footing.
And this amounts to an emergency crisis that Charles himself claims necessitates a military-style response similar to the Marshall Plan that's required to combat climate change.
Here we need a vast military-style campaign to marshal the strength of the global private sector. With trillions at his disposal, far beyond global GDP.
And he repeated himself and doubled down, calling for a vast military-style campaign that would, quote, marshal the strength of the global private sector. nothing short of what he calls a war against climate change.
All right, let's stop it at the 53-minute mark. This is very, very interesting.
Okay.
And this guy thinks he's he thinks he's the Lord of all the earth.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's exactly it. I thought their timing was great on that. You know, this came out last Sunday, and you know, it showed up in my feed, and I thought, you know, this is perfect. I listened to it, and I thought, this is exactly what's going on. You know, we can match all that, you know,
sure,
to what we see.
Sure.
So.
Absolutely. Well, we stopped it at the 53-minute mark. Make that notation for next week.
Okay.
And great show, great show. And
thank you.
You know, you look at Charles and you say, oh, my goodness, just sit him over in the corner and give him a dunce cap. But now you realize that he's been groomed.
That's right. That's right. This is the guy that was a fun of jokes for falling off the polo horse. Remember that?
Sure.
Years ago? How many times was he going to fall off the polo horse? And people made fun of him constantly.
Yeah.
No one gave him a second thought about being in power ever and what it would be
and
like.
And now, forget it. Now he's the he is the newest flavor.
Yep.
Newest flavor. Great show. You have the last word.
Well, thank you, brother. Thank you, everyone. And, you know, the Lord willing, we will see you next week. Have a great day.
Proclaim all the words of his hand. Day after day, they pour forth their speech. Night after night, they display. Bridegroom coming forth from his pavilion.